This week on Vaticano, the first beatification cause of a laywoman from Central Asia has reached the Vatican. Learn about the unwavering faith of Gertruda Detzel, who kept her faith alive despite decades spent in Soviet labor camps and prisons. Discover the fascinating connection between Cardinal John Henry Newman and artificial intelligence as the Jubilee of Education celebrates his proclamation as a doctor of the Church and co-patron of Catholic education. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. The hidden story of servant of God Gertruda Detzel, a laywoman who kept the flame of faith alive through decades of Soviet persecution, has now reached Rome. Bishop Evgeny Zinkovsky, auxiliary bishop of Karaganda, Kazakhstan, presented her cause to Pope Leo XIV, a day after a meeting at the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. A small delegation from Kazakhstan arrived with two sealed boxes, more than 30 pounds of documents, testimonies, and accounts of reported miracles. This moment marks the beginning of the Roman phase of her beatification process, and the first time a laywoman from Central Asia has reached this stage.
It was very moving to see that even our distant case from Kazakhstan, that of our servant of God Gertruda, was received so warmly, with open arms.
Born in 1903 in the Caucasus into a family of ethnic Germans, Gertruda Detzel was deported to Kazakhstan under Stalin's rule. She spent years in the Soviet labor camps, imprisoned first for her ethnicity and later for something even more dangerous to the regime, her unwavering faith and missionary zeal.
When Gertruda was a child, during a conversation with her parish priest, she once said, "I wish I could be a priest. Why did God let me be born a girl and not a boy?" The priest comforted her and said, "Gertruda, be patient. God will show you one day why he made you a girl and not a boy." And indeed, soon after, the church began to be persecuted. Priests were arrested, one after another, and before long, there were no priests left free. Many were gone. Then Gertruda understood what God had planned for her. She began gathering people for prayer services.
After her release from prison in southern Kazakhstan, Gertruda Detzel chose to settle in Karaganda, the beating heart of the underground church. Only as a laywoman could she enter homes and keep families strong in faith when priests could not. Sister Maria Alma, who has spent over 30 years as a missionary in Kazakhstan, says Gertruda's life is a reminder that the fruits of one's service are not always seen. What truly matters, she says, is to do good for God and for people.
What influences me the most is that whenever she chose to go somewhere or to do something, her reason was always the same. She wanted to do something good for God and for people.
Her home became a refuge, a place where families drew strength, children learned the catechism by heart, and where the Eucharist, entrusted to her by priests in secret, reached those who could not attend Mass. Earlier this year, the diocesan investigation concluded in Karaganda. Researchers even uncovered her original Soviet case file, confirming the years she spent in prison for her faith. On December the 22nd, 1989, the Supreme Court of Kazakhstan officially rehabilitated her, clearing her of all charges and restoring her good name.
God, who knows everything, saw the courage of her faith and love. He still sees it now, and may it be that in her example, the faith of so many other unknown believers will also find its confirmation in God's love.
Inside the walls of the Biblioteca Valliceliana, a 16th century library founded by St. Philip Neri, an international conference organized by the University of Notre Dame, Australia, explored the dialogue between St. John Henry Newman and artificial intelligence, ahead of his declaration as Doctor of the Church.
Ecclesiae Universalis Doctorem Declaramus.
In an ever-evolving age of technology, there are many concerns about how the fast development of artificial intelligence is impacting future generations and whether it's replacing their skill of thinking for themselves, something that St. John Henry Newman emphasized throughout his work. The now Doctor of the Church stressed the importance of forming the mind and developing a good judgment between right and wrong.
We need to be in dialogue because younger generations are using it much more, but they may not have the wisdom to discern how to use it well. And for that, I think older generations need to enter into it and take a dive in a sense, so that we can talk with one another and see how can we best use it.
A significant challenge that comes with the growing pace of AI is its effect on education. And many question how it can be assured that students today and in the future are obtaining their degrees honestly. Andrew Messaros, who holds the St. John Henry Newman Chair in Theology at the Angelicum University, believes that this is a massive challenge.
If we're satisfied with students creating a product, producing something like producing a finished essay or producing a poster or producing a video or something as a project, and they use AI to complete that project, then fair enough, it's a tool and it can be used in that way. But if we're not assessing the product, but if we're assessing the way they think, then I'm afraid that AI is actually an obstacle to assessing them correctly or assessing what they really truly know.
AI has also become inseparable from social media, guiding feeds, ads, interactions, and the way we connect, making these platforms very influential, especially on young minds. Australian Ambassador to the Holy See, Keith Pitt, explains the introduction of a new Australian law which prohibits anyone under the age of 16 from accessing social media.
Well, it's been coming for some time, and mostly will be in force in December of this year, 2025. It's simply about the fact that there is overwhelming evidence that social media has a negative impact on children. And so Australia has put forward laws and regulations that require the platform providers to ensure their users are over the age of 16. So it is effectively a ban on social media for children.
Artificial intelligence can serve as a guide for how young people's minds work and how they think. The importance of forming the mind and conscience was one of St. John Henry Newman's biggest talking points. If he were alive today, would he be a supporter of AI?
I think like any technology, I think John Henry Newman would be curious and he would explore it and he might even use it and he might even use it to great effect. I think he would be incredibly cautious, however, about its effect on us, its effect on interpersonal relationships.
Coming right up, relive the joy and inspiration of the Jubilee of Education here on Vaticano. This was one of the longest events of the Holy Year, the Jubilee of the World of Education, held from Monday, October the 27th to Sunday, November the 2nd. This Jubilee event was dedicated to schools and universities, including ecclesiastical faculties, becoming a true constellation of hope to guide and illuminate the educational journey of the new generations.
Education, not just Catholic education in general, is facing enormous challenges today. One of the challenges, at least for the most industrialized world, is the fact that you have less students because you have a demographic impact. And another problem is the fragility of many people that come to school that we have never seen at this level. The other one is the impact on AI. So there's a lot of issues that are changing the education in general. And we hope that the Catholic Church, under the lead of Pope Leo, will be able to answer concretely to these challenges.
Plenty of issues require concrete answers and solutions. The event at the Vatican, under the auspices of the Dicastery of Culture and Education, brought together students, educators, and experts through conferences, meetings, and spiritual celebrations.
L'idea è essenzialmente quella di avere cinque spazi.
The main idea was to create five shared spaces, each representing a different way of being present. These five spaces animate and form what are known as the educational constellations within the global educational village.
Pope Leo XIV was like a guiding star for the thousands of young people who came to Rome during these days, participating enthusiastically in the various events. He celebrated the opening Mass, which also marked the inauguration of the new academic year for Catholic universities. Before the ceremony, the Pope signed an apostolic letter written to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the conciliar declaration Gravissimum Educationis. During a special meeting with students on October the 30th, Pope Leo XIV said that education is like a telescope. It allows us to look beyond and discover what we would not otherwise see. He reminded everyone that we're called to become shining witnesses for those around us.
Ma come dicevo, una stella da sola.
But, as I said, a single star on its own remains just a point of light. When it joins others, however, it forms a constellation, like the Southern Cross. This is how it is with you. Each of you is a star, and together you are called to guide the future. Education brings people together into lively communities and organizes ideas into constellations of meaning.
The World Congress, entitled Educational Constellations, A Pact with the Future, dedicated to addressing the challenges of global education, was one of the highlights of the Jubilee Week. More than 5,000 experts from all continents registered to take part in the event.
Above all, we discussed issues regarding the right to education, because unfortunately, there are still some countries where the right to education does not exist or is very limited. Then we had a second session. It was about the major changes the world is currently experiencing. Among them, the famous artificial intelligence, which is increasingly present. So, the Catholic education's response to this new phenomenon, to these new paradigms that are emerging today.
The Congress focused on the importance of the human educational mission and its changing cultural context, encompassing all levels of learning, from early childhood education to the university. In the conferences, discussions, and different initiatives during the Jubilee Week, experts from different parts of the world were involved, and the spirit of universality and the global reach of the Church and of the world of education could be felt everywhere.
Even the liturgy of the Mass, which is also significant, and the language of the prayers of the faithful were prepared in various languages, such as Korean, Chinese, and Arabic. This highlights the peripheries of the world, where there are also many Catholic universities in Asia and Africa. We have developed this space very thoroughly. As our prefect Cardinal Mendoza emphasizes, this Jubilee exists to show the world and ourselves the richness of the Church's system, its educational structure, and Catholic education.
In a solemn Mass in St. Peter's Square, presided over by Pope Leo, for the conclusion of the Jubilee of the World of Education, the Holy Father proclaimed St. John Henry Newman a doctor of the Church, calling him a master of theory and practice of education, who invites us to offer the kindly light of faith in Providence.
We'll be right back.
from academic discussions at universities to public prayer meetings with world leaders to colorful performances by multicultural dance groups and choirs. People of all ages, religions, and nations came together in the Eternal City to commemorate the 60th anniversary of Nostra Aetate, Pope Paul VI's October the 28th declaration on the Church's relations with non-Christian religions, to close days of celebration dedicated to interreligious dialogue and encounter. Pope Leo XIV welcomed thousands of pilgrims of all faiths and creeds to St. Peter's Square and called for a renewed commitment to prayer and peace.
Today we are called upon to rekindle that hope in our world, devastated by war and our degraded natural environment. Let us collaborate, because if we are united, everything is possible. Let us ensure that nothing divides us. And in this spirit, I would like to express once more my gratitude for your presence and your friendship. Let us transmit this spirit of friendship and collaboration to the future generation too, because it is the true pillar on which dialogue rests.
Perché è il vero pilastro del dialogo.
Taking into account the Church's vision for greater fellowship among nations, Gregorian University professors Ambrogio Bongiovanni and Massimo Gargiulo organized a three-day interfaith conference supported by the Vatican's Dicastery for Interreligious Dialogue and Commission for Religious Relations with the Jews to discuss the relevance, challenges, and future of Nostra Aetate.
Now we are living a situation in the world where we have somehow developing a kind of negative approach to otherness, you know, just building walls instead of bridges. So I would say that rethinking Nostra Aetate supports the idea of building bridges among people, among differences.
For Professor Massimo Gargiulo, the Church cannot celebrate Nostra Aetate without first turning to the past, recalling the historic encounter between Cardinal Augustin Bea and French-Jewish historian Jules Isaac. Gargiulo said the groundbreaking declaration was born from the Church's desire to strengthen relations between Catholics and Jews.
The first important thing of this document is that it recognizes what is historically true, that is, that the origins of Christianity are rooted into Judaism for the reason that Jesus was a Jew, that Paul was a Jew, and so on. So the first thing is this acknowledgement. The second one is the Church recognizes its responsibilities toward the Jews for their history from the ancient times until the World War II and the Holocaust, because it recognizes the bad results, the tragic results of Christian anti-Judaism.
With both the past and future in mind, the 300 Gregorian University Conference participants from 44 countries, who represented 14 world religions, including Jainism and Sikhism, were also among Pope Leo's honored guests at the Walking Together in Hope gathering held inside the Vatican's Paul VI Audience Hall on October the 28th.
This is the journey that Nostra Aetate invites us to continue, to walk together in hope. Then, when we do so, something beautiful happens. Hearts open, bridges are built, and new paths appear where none seemed possible. This is not the work of one religion, one nation, or even one generation. It is a sacred task for all humanity to keep hope alive, to keep dialogue alive, and to keep love alive in the heart of the world.
Just hours before the interfaith gathering at the Vatican, Pope Leo prayed alongside several religious leaders at the Colosseum at the International Meeting for Peace, promoted by the community of Sant'Egidio in Rome. United by their desire for peace and justice, they urged political leaders to cooperate and end conflicts and serve humanity.
Dio chiederà conto a chi non ha cercato la pace
God will ask an accounting of those who failed to seek peace or who fomented tensions and conflicts. He will call them to account for all the days, months, and years of war. As religious leaders, this is the heartfelt appeal that we make to those in positions of government. We share the desire for peace for all peoples. We are the voice of those who are not heard and the voiceless. We must dare peace. Even if the world turns a deaf ear to this appeal, we are certain that God will hear our prayer and the cries of so many who suffer. God, who wants a world without war, He will free us from this evil.
Mondo senza guerra, Egli ci libererà da questo male.
We'll return shortly with the remarkable story of Father Yeshi Popiełuszko, only on Vaticano. In 1984, Polish priest Father Yeshi Popiełuszko was assassinated by the Communist Security Service. He was kidnapped, beaten to death, and then thrown into a nearby reservoir. Father Popiełuszko was known for his strong opposition to the Communist regime and his celebration of Masses for his homeland, during which he'd preach about truth, human dignity, and freedom. In 2010, the beatification of Popiełuszko took place under the pontificate of Pope Benedict XVI. The Blessed's brother, Josef Popiełuszko, recalls where he was at the time he found out about his brother's disappearance.
Well, at that time I was in Germany, at the house of my sister's neighbor, doing some work to get by. I went there to work, and while I was there, the wife called to ask if I knew anything about Father Jerzy. I didn't know anything, because I was still working in the Forest Service. She called me again, saying, come back. You know, I took the car and drove off. I reached Warsaw. I've been to Warsaw so many times. And I knew exactly where I was coming from. So many flowers, so many candles.
During the trial process, one of his brother's assassins threatened his family, leaving Josef and his wife with no other choice but to send their children to Chicago for safety.
After the trial, which my father attended every single day, he heard from Piotrowski, maybe not these exact words, but something to this effect, a message saying that there will be no more Piotrowskis, but there will also be no more Popiełuszkos. My father took that as a threat, and together with my mother, they decided that they had to protect us, their children.
Ten years ago, Marek and his father Josef started the Blessed Yeshi Popiełuszko Foundation. Carrying his words in their hearts, this foundation sets out to uphold the legacy of Father Yeshi, with the help of his family and young people. 19-year-old Eliza Pardika is a representative of the young people of Father Popiełuszko and the leader of the youth council at the foundation.
You know what really inspires me about Father Yeji is his authenticity and his courage. Why his authenticity? Because he was always the same. He was simply himself, no matter what situation he found himself in, he was always true to himself.
The Popiełuszko Foundation is in the process of building a museum in the Polish town of Okapi, where Father Yeji was born, in commemoration of his work and life.
Nel nome del Padre, del Figlio e dello Spirito Santo, la pace sia con voi.
They traveled to Rome to ask Pope Leo XIV during the Wednesday audience to bless a coal stone, which they plan on putting in the museum.
It was an amazing experience. I'm still deeply impressed. It was wonderful, and I hope that next time we'll be able to attend the canonization, maybe soon. Perhaps the Holy Father will take a closer look at the matter, just as I asked him, and we'll be able to come here again.